Well, it's another Saturday morning and the week goes so quickly. It's time for Dr. Ross. And we always say, if you have any questions for Dr. Ross, we invite you to send them to us via email. You can do that by going to the 2SM website. You look for the drop-down list of names and you send your questions to Brent Bultitude. As we always start with listener questions, let's do that, Ross. Ali says, what are the early signs of osteoporosis, and at what age should people begin getting tested for bone health? I thought this was apt to ask you first up, Ross, because today, a little later, we're talking about different tests that people should have and at what stage and age they should start having those tests.
Yeah, absolutely. So, look, the whole point about osteoporosis, it's a bit like high blood pressure. It can be a silent killer. So the first presentation of osteoporosis may be your first fracture. Equally, some people do get bone pain, but I've got to say the bone pain happens pretty late. So in terms of specific symptoms of osteoporosis, the answer is none, apart from falling over and easily fracturing something. So I think in terms of managing this, unfortunately, recent studies have come out to show that over 65% of Australians over the age of 50 have some degree of either osteopenia, which is between normal and osteoporosis, or even frank osteoporosis. Obviously, the amount of people over 50 with frank osteoporosis is much less, but they're on their way to osteoporosis already, 65% over the age of 50. Now, let me make some comments about this because I think it's a really, really important topic. That osteoporosis, like all other conditions, is a genetic disease. So you get osteoporosis because you've inherited something from the combination of your mum and dad to make you. But as I say all the time, your genes loads the gun, your environment pulls the trigger. So if you have the genes for osteoporosis and, for example, as a woman, you go through menopause and your hormones go south, it markedly increases your risk for osteoporosis. So 25% of postmenopausal women have a degree of osteoporosis. 5% of men over the age of 65 have a degree of osteoporosis, but many more have osteopenia, which basically just means weakening in the bones. The bones aren't as strong as they were, because here's the problem. Osteoporosis starts at age 30. It doesn't start at 50, it starts at 30, because 30 is the peak of our life in all aspects. So no high-performance athletes are as good as they were in their 30s as they were in their 20s, because their body is at its peak in that age. So osteoporosis starts at 30, but there's no point really at 30 having assessments for it, because it's a bit too early. But I think really for women who've gone well through menopause, maybe at age 60, it's a good idea to have a DEXA scan. For men, probably at age 70, it's a good idea to have a DEXA scan if you've not had one up to that point. And then have it every few years based on how much osteoporosis or osteopenia you had on the scan. And there are things that you can do to help reduce the progression of osteoporosis. And there are five things I talk about before you need all of the well-established pharmaceutical therapies for osteoporosis. The best treatment and prevention of osteoporosis is a thing I've mentioned to you once or twice, Brent. It's called exercise. So 3 to 5 hours a week of exercise, which should be 2/3 cardio and 1/3 resistance training. So the resistance part of it, light weights, stretching, etc., yoga, Pilates, that is an important thing to do, because that also strengthens your muscles and your bones, because your muscles also get weak, as do your bones. So exercise is vital. Number two is don't take oral calcium. So many times, I even saw a patient in the last few days who saw an endocrinologist, and the endocrinologist says, take oral calcium. There's no evidence at all that oral calcium prevents osteoporosis, treats osteoporosis, or prevents bone fracture. But what a big study out of the University of Auckland showed is that it can increase your risk for a heart attack by 30%, because it calcifies your arteries and makes your arteries stiffer. So I just think you should be getting calcium from organic sources such as dairy, not from pills such as calcium, any form of calcium carbonate. Number three is, do not consume any form of soft drinks. because whether they're artificially sweetened drinks or sugar sweetened drinks, they have a thing in them called phosphoric acid that rips the calcium out of your bones. Number four, keep your vitamin D levels at about 100. So I think everybody living in our society who doesn't want to get fried by the sun should be taking 1,000 international units of vitamin D, two of those capsules a day. So that's 2,000 units a day of vitamin D, because that usually will get your vitamin D levels around 100. And then finally, vitamin K2, 180 micrograms a day, takes the calcium out of your arteries and puts it back in your bones. So that's my bit of an overview on osteoporosis.
Joan wants to know what could be causing her frequent headaches and how she can tell if they are related to stress, tension, or something more serious. Also, she says, could you please ask Dr. Ross, is there a specific diet or lifestyle change that might help reduce the frequency or severity of her headaches?
The first problem when someone gets frequent headaches, and I'm presuming Joan is an older person because most young people aren't called Joan anymore. So if someone over the age of 50 and especially over the age of 60, 65 is getting headaches, it's important to exclude a serious cause of headache. So if Joan's getting frequent headaches, I certainly believe she should have an MRI of her brain to make sure there's nothing there that may be more serious. That's the first thing. And secondly, there's a condition called temporal arteritis, which is a part of what we call polymyalgia rheumatica, which is a very common autoimmune disease where the arteries going into the temporal region get inflamed and you can get headaches with it. It's a serious condition that can lead to blindness if it's not diagnosed. So I would like Joan to go off to a doctor and ask for the cerebral MRI and also to have a test called an ESR and an HSCRP, highly sensitive C-reactive protein. The ESR stands for erythrocyte sedimentation rate. And they're two very important inflammatory markers. Now, if Joan's MRI is completely normal and her HSCRP and ESR are completely normal, then she does not have a serious cause for her headaches. So then you look at any medication she may be taking that could contribute to headaches, because all pills have the potential to cause a headache. And then when people are getting headaches, you look at what's going on in their neck, because the neck is a common source of headaches, causing a thing called occipital neuralgia and therefore headaches. And there are some physiotherapists around Australia who are specialised in doing a technique called upper cervical mobilisation, never manipulation of the neck, that's dangerous, but they mobilise the upper neck and can really relieve people who are getting recurrent headaches. And Joan mentioned stress. Stress is a common precipitant for headaches. There are many other precipitants. And there are a whole lot of treatments for migraine, and there are a whole lot of other different headaches, such as cluster headaches, which can be managed by an expert neurologist. So you start off simple, exclude serious stuff, and then move towards, is it a neck problem? If it's not a neck problem, how can your headaches be managed? It's not just a matter of going off to the local health food store and picking up some migraine tonic, or going to your chemist and saying, I've got headaches, can I have painkillers? It's a much more significant condition. And it's estimated that about 12% of the population do suffer some form of migraine headache, which can be disabling. But Joan needs this managed properly. I hope she'll get something out of that overview.
Kevin sends in an email. Ross, he says, I'm 62 and have white, roundish marks on my arms and legs. It's like my skin has lost its colour. Kevin wants to know, Ross, should he be worried about this?
Yeah, well, look, there's a few things that I'm a bit concerned about here. That firstly, the white roundish marks on the skin may be due to some sort of fungal infection. Equally, there are some endocrine issues that can cause this as well. And I think he needs to get to see a dermatologist. Get the dermatologist to have a look at the skin, see if it is something fungal, and then some treatment can be given to fix up that. But if not, he may even need to see an endocrinologist, because sometimes it's more common in women than men to have these white marks on the skin. But again, an endocrinologist is the best person to sort them out. But the first port of call when you have something like this is a dermatologist to make a proper diagnosis and then to give some directed treatment at it.
Maud says, I enjoy your segments with Dr. Ross immensely. Could you please ask him, how can we differentiate between common symptoms of aging and early signs of more serious conditions like dementia or cardiovascular disease?
Yeah, well, look, can I say, everyone at the age of 50 is obviously aging because we were designed to wander around a jungle for 30, 40 years with a spear and then die from an infection or have your head ripped off by a saber-toothed tiger. Now, we live in a much less harsh environment than the hunter-gatherers did 10,000 years ago. So because of that, we're now going often double our use-by date in a much more friendly environment than they used to live in. So because of that, when we hit 50 and the hormones go south, things do wear out quickly. And there's a fellow called Professor David Sinclair, who is an Australian who actually grew up in the suburbs near where I live in Sydney, but he's now the world anti-aging guru in Harvard University. He says that aging is a disease that is treatable and preventable, and the earlier you start, the better. So he's now working on anti-aging techniques to slow down the aging process. But here's the key. Aging is the key step with chronic inflammation for all major chronic diseases that kill people, whether it be heart disease, whether it be cancer, Alzheimer's, diabetes, osteoporosis, all of these things that take us off the planet. The key factor there is that they're much more common in an older person than they are in a younger person. So even a 30-year-old who abuses their body with cigarettes or alcohol or illegal drugs has a much lesser chance of dying of some chronic disease than an 80-year-old who looks after themselves well, because aging kicks in there. So aging is something that is, I'm not saying it's normal, it is a disease, but no one at 80 looks as good as they did when they were 60, and no one at 60 looks as good as they did when they were 40, and no one at 40 looks as good as they did at 20, because as I said before, 30 is the peak of your life. So how do you tell the difference between what is just what you'd expect at a particular age as opposed to a disease? Well, it's pretty easy. It's called symptoms. So if people are getting symptoms of, say, for example, let's pick on cardiovascular disease first, and I'll move to Alzheimer's in a second, if I remember. No, it's a joke. But with cardiovascular disease, people will get chest discomfort, discomfort from the tip of their nose to their belly button they're not sure about, especially when they exert themselves or they're stressed. They'll find they're more short of breath. They'll find that they get palpitations. They're lightheaded. Their legs start to swell. So if people are getting symptoms, symptoms are nature's ticket into the system. So as soon as you get symptoms, it needs to be reported. Shane Warne went to a doctor with chest discomfort. The doctor advised him to go into hospital, and he said, no, I'll do that when I come back from Thailand. You don't put off symptoms. You get them checked. It is a medical emergency if you're getting chest discomfort. You don't wait 3 or 4 weeks to get in to see your doctor. If you have bad chest discomfort, you get to a hospital. So that's cardiovascular disease. There's almost always symptoms going with it. And as I've said to you on numerous occasions, regardless of how you're feeling, all males at 50 or females at 60 should have a coronary calcium score, which tells you whether you've got early buildup of muck in your arteries and whether you need to do something about it. So the coronary calcium score is a vital part of the management of people with early cardiovascular disease. And again, if you've got a high calcium score, you're headed towards heart disease, you need to do something about it before you actually get the problem. So let's move on to Alzheimer's disease. With Alzheimer's disease, there's a difference between being a normal person in your 60s and 70s. And look, all of us, Brent, I'm a bit older than you, but we're around the same age. All of us struggle a bit at times to remember people's names, or you'll see somebody go, oh, gee, I know. You see someone on television say, I've seen them before in another show. I just can't remember which show it was. But then 3 or 4 hours later, it might just jump into your head. That is just called being in your 60s and 70s. That is not a sign of dementia. You might walk into a room and say, what was I supposed to be doing here? Again, if you do that occasionally, that's just normal, especially when you're under a bit of stress. But it's when you don't even realize you've got problems with your memory and you don't even have any insight into it, that's more of a feature of something like early Alzheimer's disease. So it's significant loss of short-term memory. You might remember plenty of things that happened 30 years ago, but you just can't remember what you were going to do, and that becomes a consistent problem. That is a major feature of Alzheimer's disease. So it's memory issues, it's cognitive issues. You don't think as well. You feel a bit disoriented. I spoke to a person the other day who said they just feel when they're driving through an area, they just can't even remember that they've been in that area before, even though they know they've been there. They're some early features potentially for things like Alzheimer's disease. So really, the answer, I know it's a long-winded answer to Maud's question, but the real answer to all of this, if something's happening over and above what is normal for most people, then you need to have it checked out.
Ross, we've covered quite a few of the topics today, retesting. So let's just jump to that particular section. Regular health screenings are vital, as we know, for early detection and prevention of various diseases, ranging from general health concerns to more specific conditions, like cardiovascular disease, as we've talked about, cancer, bone health, and mental health. The timing, frequency, and type of screening tests are very dependent on individual health, age, and risk factors. So, as I said, we've touched on cardiovascular, cancer, bone health. Ross, how often should you undergo general health checks like vision, hearing, and dental exams?
Well, there are general exams. Like hearing and vision should be checked every couple of years if people are going okay. If you're noticing that things are deteriorating rapidly, then you must get these things checked urgently. But if you feel your vision's pretty good and your hearing's pretty good, it's just good to have a general simple check. It's inexpensive. A lot of these services are offering them for free, basic tests. Do that every 2 years. Dental checks should really be every 6 months. Have your teeth cleaned every 6 to 12 months and have dental work every 6 months. So they're the general things we should be doing. But in terms of when should people start being screened, and how often should that screening occur? I believe, unless there's a rampant family history of early disease of any sort, you should probably go to a doctor at age 30 to have your initial screening test. Now, people might say, oh, it's a bit early, but, and some people say, oh, what about my children at age 20? No, no, no. People in their 20s think they're bulletproof. No matter what you say to them, anyhow, they're not going to follow your advice. So I think 30 is a time when people start to think, oh, I've reached 30, I've got some bad habits, I want to shed those bad habits, I'm a little bit more concerned about mortality than I was when I was 20. So I'll have some checkups there. And I think really it's good to have a general check of your full blood count, your kidneys, your liver, obviously your sugar levels, your cholesterol levels. And one thing I like people to have once in their life, they don't need to keep having the test, it's either high or it's low, and you and I have spoken about this on numerous occasions, is a thing called lipoprotein little a. So that's lipoprotein, lowercase a in brackets. And that is the cause of 1 in 5 cases of heart disease. And if you have that in your bloodstream, you're at a 70% higher risk of getting vascular disease throughout your life. So it's really important people know pretty early on in their life whether they've got a high lipoprotein little a, because there are so many strategies that I've been using for 30 years. I've been measuring this thing for 30 years in my patients. Doctors have only been doing it for the last 2 or 3 years, but I've been measuring it for 30 years because I've been using natural strategies to do something about it with great effect. So I'd be having all of those sort of checks. But if you don't have rampant history, you have those checks, have your blood pressure checked, have your waist circumference measured, height, weight, all of those sort of things, and just have that done probably every 10 years if you're a healthy person. When you hit 50, I think that's where the assessments have to start getting more serious. So at age 50, definitely the calcium score for the males, and that's where women start the breast checks, because mammography is radiation, and there's only 3 advantages of being over the age of 50, Brent. 1 is wisdom, 2 is grandchildren if you got them, and 3, you lose the cancer risk from medical radiation. So I think that's why 50 is a good age to start getting the regular mammograms. That's when you start to have now the National Bowel Cancer checks, the poo test that you do for blood. They start starting now at age 45, so it's a very, very good thing to do. And I actually believe, Brent, that everyone deserves 1 colonoscopy in their life over the age of 50. But I think it's a good thing to have it once. In my case, with a strong family history of bowel cancer, I'm coming up for my 5th colonoscopy. So it just depends on obviously medical history. Males should have a PSA starting at 50. Women should have all the gynecologic checks all throughout their life. And these things should just be an ongoing thing. And I think screening should stop at age 75. Now, I'm not being ageist, but the reason why it should stop at 75 is if you haven't developed the disease up to that point, you're probably not going to get it, and you're probably wasting your time and the medical profession's time and the government purse by having ongoing checks. So I received an email the other day from a fellow who is not one of my patients, but an 88-year-old man who's still playing squash. And he said to me, I'd like to have a calcium score to see if it's okay if I keep playing squash. Well, if he's made it to 88 and he can still play squash, calcium score is a waste of time at his age. But I've said, if you want to keep playing squash, he should be doing a stress echocardiogram every year to make sure his heart can cope with the squash, in the same way that once people get to a certain age, we get them to have driving checks. Hypertension is the greatest cardiovascular risk factor. Everyone carries on about cholesterol. I'm not saying cholesterol is unimportant, but hypertension, especially as you get older, is the major cardiovascular risk factor. So I don't care if you're 95, if your blood pressure is drifting up at 95, I'd put you on a medication. The worst call I ever had to my radio show was a woman who rang in and said, my 95-year-old father's general practitioner wanted to start him on a statin because his cholesterol was 5.2. Now, firstly, measuring cholesterols in 95-year-olds, I think, is medical negligence, unless they've got very severe vascular disease. They probably wouldn't have made it to 95 with severe vascular disease. But there's just no point doing it. But blood pressure is always a problem, no matter what age you are, and that always needs to be monitored and treated. I'm just, when I said stop screening at 75, I don't mean stop going to the doctor. I'm just saying don't have coronary calcium scores over 75, and don't get there and have your cholesterols measured over 75 if you haven't had vascular disease up to that point. There's just no point doing it, and you won't need colonoscopies over 75 if you've never had polyps, even if you've got a family history of bowel cancer, and you made it to 75. The polyps are probably not going to start coming over the age of 75. So they're the sort of comments I'm making. PSA checks shouldn't be done in people certainly over the age of 80 and probably not over 75.
What about blood tests for people that aren't 75 yet? How regular should you have all the blood tests? Once a year?
Well, again, it depends on your clinical story. But if you're a perfectly healthy person with no risk factors for everything, as I said, probably every 10 years. So a lot of people get over-tested too often and they don't need it. So it really just depends on your own situation. Where I've got some patients who need to have blood tests every 6 months, because they've got pretty severe cardiovascular disease. They need very careful monitoring. So I need to be on their case. But other people who want to have more blood tests, I try and talk them out of it, because I don't like making healthy people into patients.
Ross, our time is up, mate. It goes so quickly when we talk to you. As always, thank you for answering our listener questions. And we look forward to catching up with you again next Saturday morning.
Okay, talk with you next week. Ta-da, mate. Bye.